Inspiration is for amateurs.
It is a wonderfully chaotic place.
Loud and bursting with personality.
How did he do this? What's real? What's not?
I feel the vibe.
I need to feed off activity.
I want people's senses to be engaged.
In the studio.
In the studio.
In the studio.
This is magical.
BBC World Service.
Okay, how do we make this thing?
I don't know about you, but I've been spending a lot of time this past year looking at simple, minimal design. If I'm up past midnight scrolling the internet, it's most likely because I'm looking at spaces and the furniture that goes in them that give me peace and joy in their spare elegance. I'm thinking that's probably because I live in a cluttered house that's been taken over with piles. Schoolwork, work, stacks of books and papers that obscure just about every surface. What I long for are the clean lines of well-designed things. I'm your host, Laura Hubber, welcoming you to In the Studio from the BBC World Service. We're the podcast that takes you with the world's leading artistic talents as they iterate their way through the creative process. But what are you searching for in these crazy times? Especially when being forced to stay at home makes us look at every single item we own differently. If you could swap out one thing, what would it be? Tweet me at BBC World Service to let me know, and be sure to include the hashtag BBC in the studio so I get your message. When I heard who today's artist was, I looked up his designs. They're not just elegant, they're beautiful. My favorite is his In the Secret Garden series, which includes ethereal glass objects like hanging lights and tables infused with luminescent colors. It's hard to imagine how a designer who makes singular objects that are so special and often very expensive adapts to design something more universally accessible. But in today's podcast, we're going to learn with him as he struggles to make an object we all use every day. So let's join Imogene Folks as she travels to a lake in Switzerland to track down rockstar designer Innie Archibong.
Now, while you're listening to this, where are you? If you're anywhere near a chair, can I suggest you sit down? Because this program is all about making a chair. How do they get made? It turns out there are all sorts of processes and considerations, things that probably never cross our minds, but they're all crucial.
The different textures and finishes that they're able to apply to it, it's how these textures play with light.
It's a question of scale. It's a question of weight.
When you're touching the chair and interacting with the back, which is basically going to act as, you know, a handle when you're pulling the chair away from the table.
Careful with the pulling point on clothing or anything that's on the back of the chair.
Controlling the way that the light catches, you know, the surfaces.
Deal with the elements, deal with UV.
Colors that can hold underneath, you know, the weather conditions outdoor.
So, in the words of an old BBC children's program, are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. As I said, this program is about a chair. The man who's making it is the innovative designer and artist Innie Archibong. Just 38 years old, he's already made a name for himself designing watches for high-end brands like Hermes, sofas for upmarket London furniture house Say, and unique pieces for art galleries. His aim, he once said, is to create beauty with a function. With this project, that goal remains the same. But Innie faces a new challenge. With the chair, he's making something for the mass market.
There's nothing that has my name on it that is out there in the world that I didn't put my soul into. When I'm making art, you know, stuff that goes in the gallery, there is the moment where it has to get practical and nuts and bolts and how are we going to make this? But it's usually, how are we going to make this, right? It's not, how are we going to make millions of these over the course of decades, you know? It's not, how do we make sure that everyone, you know, from somebody who's 5 feet tall up to somebody that's, you know, 6'9", you know, or taller, is going to be comfortable in this thing. And the way that I try to work is I put all of that thought in, and then I free myself to make art.
To create the chair, Innie's working with the furniture design company Knoll. Founded in 1938 in Pennsylvania, the company's famous for its elegantly efficient workplace furniture. Some of the world's most creative designers have worked here. Now it's Innie's turn. His brief to produce two chairs, one with arms, one without, and a table. Benjamin Pardo, Knoll's Executive Vice President for Design, will guide the process throughout.
Innie is working on a series of tables and chairs that will work primarily in a cafe environment, which is important to think about in terms of what is the relationship between a table and a chair in that circumstance. The chair potentially needs to, or not potentially, the chair actually needs to stack, and the chairs need to think of working both inside and outside.
The recording for this program actually begins in July 2019, when I meet Innie at his studios on the shores of Lake Neuchâtel, Switzerland.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Imogen.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, hi.
He was born and raised in Pasadena, California. He graduated from art college there, then came to Switzerland for further study, and he's lived here ever since. Neuchâtel is traditionally the heartland of Swiss watchmaking, and Innie's studio is in fact a former watchmaker's atelier. The big windows flood it with the light those watchmakers needed, and it's perfect for Innie's creative process too.
So now in kind of in my zone here, this is where the work gets done.
This is the white-hot creative zone, is it?
Yeah, the cockpit.
This is glass work here.
Yeah,
doing
those are all glass sketches there. Some of these are going to the museum project. Some of them are going to the gallery.
The chairs are unlike anything Innie's ever designed before. Making them requires a process called injection molding. It involves pouring the material for the chair into a special mold, meaning the end result should be one fluid piece. It's a real departure from his earlier work. So to start, Innie's been immersing himself in the culture and history of Knoll. Scattered around his studio are piles of books with pictures of some of Knoll's classic pieces. These are chairs and tables with simple, elegant, clean lines. Beautiful, but always functional.
My initial idea was to take certain visual cues of Knoll, and usually you see a frame or you see a shell. But then my idea was how can we take the American industrial history of Knoll and infuse the piece with that kind of rationality, then also have the beauty of like the formed shell.
Innie's work starts with sketches, two-dimensional drawings of shapes of possible chairs. He uses tracing paper, setting one drawing over another to compare different curves and dimensions. These are Innie's earliest attempts at creating a form for the perfect chair.
And these are all just like super rough early stuff, kind of ideating the idea of having, you know, legs attached to an arm that wraps around the back and how the frame like that interacts with the seat shell.
And you've got this clean line weightlessness as well.
Literally like each sketch explores one other tiny element that could add to this essence or this idea of the weightlessness and the elegance.
You're actually sketching, I'm looking here at semi-transparent paper. Is that so you can lie one sketch on top of the other and do some comparisons? And
so
we're looking at now maybe
so
a dozen of them now.
It's to keep the consistency. So I do the first sketch and then I lay the trace paper on top and then I make one minute change. Then I put these all, lay these out on the floor, up on a wall and have a grid and then start to notice what's really working and what's not. And it's funny because this is a technique that, you know, we used to do at Art Center in Pasadena.
Watching Innie designing chairs in this former watchmaker's studio in Switzerland, I'm curious about his journey from his childhood in California. What led Innie to become a designer? What influences his creativity?
I grew up with Nigerian immigrant parents that are scholars and scientists, more or less. My dad is an engineer. My mom is a computer scientist. They valued education very highly, so much so that, you know, we didn't attend the local school that was literally right around the corner. I went to a prep school that was on the other side of town. Yeah, I guess I grew up as they say, with a bit of a dual perspective. And I think that that allows me to take the approach that I take to my work, because at no point do I try to speak only to a specific anything, right, or anyone. When I try to express things, I try to express them in universal ways that can be understood across the board. I was a pretty geeky kid. I think probably around age 12 was when I first got my hands on like the most rudimentary 3D modeling software. For me, all of those things, like getting more serious like about drawing, you know, it all kind of happened at the same age.
From the sketches, we move to Innie's computer to see how his ideas have progressed. It's all very high-tech. Innie calls it the cockpit, and it does look a bit like that. A pilot-style chair and facing it multiple screens, where Innie uses the most up-to-date 3D modelling software to translate those drawings into a virtual chair, all to the accompaniment of the music that he says inspires his creativity. Last time that I checked,
it was five chains on my neck. The music that I listen to when it's like getting into a certain zone, usually it's confidence building music, I could say, or like sometimes it can verge on aggressive. It's like Griselda, Benny the Butcher, that kind of music will get me into a very efficient mode. So this is the chair as it stands, as it is right now. This is the version without arms, and the one you saw before is the version with arms. Again, it has the same concept that you saw in the sketches, but it's a completely different resolution. The one thing that remained the same was this detail underneath the seat, which is like the structural frame that's holding together the legs and gives a surface for the seat shell to sit on.
The seat sits on the frame where the legs are, but in the lightest of ways and curves very slightly upwards, as if it's really, as you say, it's almost floating.
It's held up by four strategically placed standoffs or something. We'll be seeing the prototypes in London soon, full scale, which is exciting.
Innie may have found a way to position the seat, but there's one issue which is preoccupying him. It's something that Benjamin Pardo mentioned earlier, and it's crucial.
One of the other very important parts of the brief was that this chair needs to stack.
I suspect that's more complicated than it sounds.
It's very complicated. Every time I find something that seems like it's working, we run into a stacking issue. Every time we solve a stacking issue, we run into an ugly issue. And there's some beautiful stacking chairs out there, but the hardest thing to do is to learn from them without remaking them.
So this was the first chair, and the critiques that we made, and Innie, chime in at any moment because it's a conversation, mm-hmm. is...
That meeting in England's capital city, London, that Innie mentioned, takes place a couple of weeks later. Innie and Benjamin are at the Knoll offices, a quiet spot away from the busy shopping streets.
And one of the things that I like about the June chair that's very important to me about an object is that light moves very nicely on this object.
I've seen the chair develop in sketches and computer models in Innie's studio, but now there's a chance to see a real chair, two in fact. Using 3D printing, a first chair was created last June, and then another in July, called the July chair. But its look don't touch and definitely don't sit, because these prototypes won't take people's weight. For Benjamin, this is an important stage.
Today's a good day because we have gone on to a second round of prototypes with regard to the armed and the armless chair. And we're sort of midway in that process, and hopefully we'll move towards cutting steel to make tools, right? Finalize where we're going.
And as Innie feared, it's the stackability of the chairs which dominates the discussion.
The other thing that took place is that in order to stack to six, the seat itself has gotten smaller, and so has the back. And I think that that's actually a pretty good improvement. But that's impacted a couple of other things. And then because the shell, meaning the seat and the back that are applied to the frame, right, became smaller to get the insertion of the back legs in the stacker to go from 4 chairs to 6 chairs, the gap between the shell, front, seat, and the leg got bigger in this current chair.
Yeah.
And it looks too big.
What you get with like with this geometry that goes into a stacking chair, you have the potential, because you have to make space between the seat and the legs, and there has to be space for the legs to stack, you have the potential to get something that the legs start like
splaying
out, and
it's like Batman opening his cape.
Yeah.
So coming back to this leg, we probably need to reduce that out.
The legs do need to come in.
Still at the end of the meeting, Benjamin is confident that what began with a few sketches on tracing paper is now well on the way to becoming Noel's latest designer chair.
And we scheduled a meeting, which is a really important thing, to take the design elements from the first chair or the June chair and apply them to the pragmatic July chair, second chair, and make the right chair so that we can literally cut steel, to make the tool that makes the chair.
I'll be able to go home and do the work that I need to do so that we can make our deadlines.
You're listening to In the Studio from the BBC World Service with me, Imogen Folks. I'm following the designer, Innie Archibong, as he works with the furniture design company, Noel, to create chairs and a table. A few weeks later, a somewhat exhausted Innie meets Benjamin again in the United States to look at the latest version of the chair.
Today's August 16th. My voice is this way because I've been in 6 countries in the last 3 weeks, working on various projects, one of them being Noel. Today we're going to be reviewing prototypes of the tables and the chairs and talking about parting lines and various design features of the products. That's with the engineers and with Benjamin Pardo. Yeah, I'm really just curious to find out what more work I need to do to get this thing in the right place.
This meeting is crucial. Adam Deskovich, Noel's materials engineer, and Evan Gerber, vice president of product development, are here too. Everyone likes the way the chair looks. The way the light catches its curves is beautiful. But soon the discussion moves on to that other goal, functionality and stackability.
And now I'm remembering the issue with moving it back that Brian brought up.
Stacking. Stacking. That would be my one big concern.
We're really close to...
I think where it becomes more of an issue is as you get into the 5 or 6 quantities,
Yeah. You
start to get that, because that leg continuously shifts forward as you're stacking them, because they don't stack completely vertical, right?
So the...
Well, because one concern I have is the stacking.
The only other thing
I would be concerned with is, you know, your attachment point up in the front of the chair, these two screws. Say if you shifted it back 1/4 inch, you start running into an area of the seat pan where you don't have too much material.
There's two things that are happening, right? So we've already determined that we're moving the legs in. So if we're moving the legs in, and if we shift this back, that might mean altering this whole section of the chair, which means that we can shift where these screws are going in, right? I mean, it's not arbitrary, but it's somewhat arbitrary. It can be changeable. I mean, if this... Let me try to...
Are we giving him so much time that the chair is starting to change too much?
The chair is... We have a new chair.
We don't have a new chair.
What are you doing?
If you ever thought making a chair was pretty straightforward, think again. Any slight change in the structure or measurements of any part of the chair can affect every other part. And here it's highlighted a key issue called the pinch point. It's a legal requirement. All chairs must have specific measurements to prevent anyone getting their fingers pinched in the gaps. Innie really doesn't love the look of the chair when it meets these requirements, but Benjamin needs him to find creative ways to make it work.
So we've been having a lot of issues associated with the armless chair issues. They're all resolvable. The armless chair, the shell back, its relationship to the frame, that distance is a potential pinch point.
This chair is intended for international distribution, so this issue is very important.
This whole shift option is my idea of how we close the gap so that, and then when we look at those two solutions, then we can decide which one is least aesthetically offensive. The chair, exactly as I modeled it the first time, is the example of perfection on earth, the best example of perfection on earth that we've ever seen.
Yeah, I get it.
So changing it is not something I want
to do. We're working with you for a reason.
I'm only thinking about this because we have to. And this whole pinch point thing, honestly, is the enemy of beauty.
Yeah, but it's a reality. People have faith. Well, so back to the question. Is what he says helpful or harmful or...
It's going in the right direction.
It's going in the right direction.
Yes. I mean, we have to reduce that gap down to a point where we can't get our fingers in
there. Or increase it.
So I think Eni, there's times when, you know, he gets stressed because of things we talk about, whether it's pinch points or parting lines, things that really start to, in his mind, take away from the pure kind of aesthetic of the chair. He's been, you know, very forgiving in areas where he's willing to bend, and obviously areas that he's more passionate about and wants to maintain, you know, that's where he'll push us, and that's where we expect designers to push us.
For Benjamin, the different perspectives of designer and engineer and the tensions that sometimes arise between them are not new.
There needs to be a mutual trust between the designer and the engineer so that when difficult decisions need to be made associated with the scale of something or the proportion of something or the fact that the designer has to then take a step back and not rethink only what the engineers are asking, but understand the impact of that on the holistic concept of the chair in this case and how he or she is going to need to make changes in other areas. And this is really very, very important for the designer to have that comfort level.
So after this meeting, there's a lot of new work for Eni and for the Knoll engineers.
So on the chair, we're really redoing the geometry of the arms and how the arms come down and actually meet the lower part of the structural frame. We're changing the bosses that actually connect the part of the back molded plate to the actual arm assembly. We're going to look at modifying the width of the front legs, as well as looking at the relative position of the back and the seat to the frame, potentially sliding that backwards to eliminate what we talked about earlier, which was really the pinch point in the chair. And then we actually have some other work to resolve stacking issues.
It's December. The changes have been made and there's been a sitting test to see what the chair actually feels like. Now, Eni and Benjamin are meeting again, this time at the Knoll offices in Milan, Italy.
Okay, so first reaction for me when I sit down is that the seat is in a good spot and... For this particular type of chair, it's not a lounge chair, so I don't want a lot of recline.
It's time to look at how the tricky issues have been resolved. First, those awkward pinch points.
And the chair that plagues us the most is the armless chair. So you want to walk us through what we've been doing there?
We had to go back and forth in trying to get the position of the seat back in the seat, the back shell and the seat shell to be comfortable. I think in the end, what ended up resolving most of it was we were in a meeting and I think it was Brian brought up that there could be a way if we adjust the sculptural form of the back of the frame, if we adjust that in a way where it more mirrors the curvature of the back shell and still maintains the original aesthetic. So then that was, you know, me getting in and doing some resculpting and bending things and moving things and bringing the frame as close as possible to the seat back so that it is less than 8 millimeters of distance at any given point, so you can't fit a finger in there to be smashed.
And second, stackability.
And if you remember, one of the things that the brief requested was that we'd be able to stack to 5. And the last time we were together, we were stacking comfortably to 4, but then the top chair was rattling out of place.
We were able to simulate on the computer, going back and forth, how high it could stack, and we could see at what point we were no longer capable to stack the chairs physically because they were colliding. But what we couldn't figure out until the last time is physically, until we had the models, that even though we could get to that last chair, it was causing that rattling.
That wiggly jiggly problem.
Yeah.
So these models were set up so that I can stack 5 So we got five of them stacked. I will compliment you because by that elongation on the back form of the X, there was some weird proportions that were coming through.
Yeah.
And the resurfacing of those areas and the changing of those forms, although subtle, I think you did really well.
Thank you.
Are you happy with where we are? That's the question.
I'm very happy
with
where
we are. Can we push the green button and say go?
I think today's green button day. Let's go.
That optimistic moment was in December 2019. A few weeks later, COVID hit. International travel ground to a halt, and it looked like the production process for the chair might stop too. Benjamin Pardo takes up the story.
COVID made us stumble, but we were able to get up and continue running. A lot of the work that we did in terms of physically making the tool that makes the chair happened at a very good moment because the German factory was running. It's not a lot of people that do this. It's done by machines. And we were able to get the tools made in that time frame.
Nearly 2 years since I first met Inny in Switzerland, all that creativity, design, discussion, and compromise is becoming reality. The pinch point and stackability problems are solved, and the chair is being made. The production line is up and running, as you can hear in the background, and rolling off at the end is, as everyone hoped, an example of that beauty and function that Inny has been striving for. The very first chairs will be shown off this June at the Design Biennale in London, where Inny has a new project, designing the pavilion of the African diaspora. And it's hoped the chairs will be ready to go on general sale later this year. For Inny, seeing the first one is a huge moment.
The chair was sitting in the sunlight in my kitchen, and I just didn't move probably for like close to 2 hours. And I really just sat there and looked at it. And it's one of those moments where the gravity really sunk in. It's not just an appreciation for the way that it was executed or a satisfaction about the quality of the product that was sitting in front of me. It was those things, but it was also, this is probably going to be the most widespread product of my career, the most accessible product of my career. Actually, the first thing I thought about Pasadena City College. These might end up at Pasadena City College, where hundreds of thousands of students come into contact with it. I thought about the schools that were around the corner from my house, where like a lot of my friends went to school, where, you know, the demographic is all black and brown kids that never really, you know, at least when I was growing up, saw that being a designer is a career path. And I thought what it might mean if these chairs were sitting in their lunch yard and somebody tells them, like, yeah, you know, a kid from around the corner designed these chairs that you guys sit in every day. And then obviously after those moments of reflection, I started to walk around and pace around the chair and turn it upside down and think about all of the places where I could have sculpted the surfaces better. since then, I've just been sitting on it and asking myself, like, how long it takes for it to become uncomfortable. And it hasn't really, it hasn't done that yet, so I think it's a pretty good chair.
Thanks so much to presenter Imogen Falk and producer Emma Kingsley for taking us on that precarious journey to stackability. Inny is so reflective. I love how he connects his own history as an immigrant to his approach to inclusive design. And I appreciate how hard it must be to design something that can be used by the greatest number of humans possible. For a chair to be comfortable for someone 5 feet and 6'9" is a huge feat. And to think that coming into contact with something he made might change the future of a child he's never met and launch him or her on a career path they never imagined. If you'd like to hear another podcast about design stretching boundaries, why not race through our own In the Studio archive for inspiration? Perhaps our podcast on Aston Martin, famous for building sports cars, as it tackles its new mission of designing an SUV. Next week, we'll be catching up with Grammy Award-winning composer and conductor Eric Whitaker, who brings thousands of singers together from all over the world with his virtual choirs.
I think music is a sonic philosophy in that, like all other art forms, really what you're doing is communicating to the performers and the listeners a worldview. It's not just notes on a page. It's how you see the world and how you see humanity's place in that world.
Well, I'm turning off my mic now. But for more Singing from the Heart, stay tuned for the next installment of You.Me, the musical.
Hey, did you hear what the BBC World Service did?
You.Me, You.Me.
They made a musical about romance and life and lockdown and COVID.
You.Me.
60 in the band, gonna bring a tear to your eye.
You.Me.
But it's funny too. Oh, and by the way, Stephen Fry is narrating it as well.
Stephen Fry.
Stunning personality. When your world is your room and your broken laptop, a musical when everything stops, coming like a comet to set your clocks, and this song is from it, a story about love and endurance and hope and imagination, actors and orchestra and Stephen Fry narration.
You.Me the Musical, a brand new musical from the BBC World Service. Search for You.Me wherever you get your podcasts.